Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another Lights On listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. Stand by. Five, the Brain four, Massage Show three, is about two, to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Dr. Jerry Scheidbach, pastor of the Lighthouse Baptist Church in Santa Maria, California, and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage. Today, I'm going to provide our culture war update. What does Moore's loss in Alabama mean to us? And, well, did he really lose? I mean, more and more, it seems that every election is fraught with all sorts of suspicions of voter fraud. What does this mean? What's the end game here? What will happen in America when the electoral process finally just collapses? Will Americans roll over and let politicians take over our country like some banana republic? So the libs have discovered they can manipulate conservative voters with accusations of sex scandals. No need for proof, just, you know, buy enough accusers. And you could compromise conservative support for any candidate. Giddy over their success with Moore. They've tried it with Trump. Wait till you hear what happened. So what has come of Trump's declaration acknowledging Jerusalem as Israel's capital? What does the Bible say about all this? And we do need to take a quick look at progress on the GOP tax bill. And if we have time, I'll offer an update on what's going on in the Supreme Court these days. And all of it's interrelated to the main point of the show. And the main focus of today's show is this. When will the culture war become an open civil war? In what ways has it already become open war between Americans? And what will have to happen that would trigger an all-out physical war of arms? My friend, it's time for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
The left declared war on America, as founded, specifically on Christian America, long ago. The animus against Christianity in general and Christians in particular has grown from relatively quiet grumbling in the background of society, with humanists taking subtle swipes at Christianity in popular culture. Generally, the world of the arts has been on an Antichrist terror for many decades. And then running parallel with the assault of the arts has been an effort to undermine Christian beliefs by the sciences, quote unquote, dating back to, well, Darwin and really before, but Darwin most notably, and then moving forward consistently increasing in hostility using a very old method, by the way, that Satan employed way back in the days of the Apostle Paul. Did you know it? Yeah. Something he warned us about called science falsely so-called, 1 Timothy 6:20. Because, friend, true science has always had a friend in Christianity. Anyway, false science in America has trained its attack specifically on Christianity in general and Christians in particular for over 100 years now. The education establishment and media's role has been to disseminate this poison, if you will, into the culture thoroughly. And the liberal Christian community, always fearful of being marginalized and made irrelevant, think about that, they began accommodating the arts and the sciences, so the church caved in and became Satan's best weapon against America. It's hard to believe, but it's true. Satan has succeeded in large measure to turn the church against America. Much of this was virtually ignored, I mean, with regard to any meaningful resistance. And even today, thousands within the sound of my voice support churches that accommodate Satan's attack on our traditional Christian culture. Pope Francis, you know, has decided that the Lord's Prayer, as it is found in both our KJV and the Douay version, which is the official Catholic version, is wrong. He wants to change the words in the Lord's Prayer. Yeah, because he does not believe the Lord ever leads us into temptation. Tell that to Abraham, where it says God did tempt Abraham, Genesis 22, verse 1. Of course, the Bible also says, let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God, for God cannot be tempted with evil. Neither tempteth he any man, James 1:13. Obviously, he never tempts anybody with evil. In the New Testament, the word for temptation is used in the same sense, but it's also used to speak of a man being drawn away of his own lusts and then enticed. And in the context, the idea is being enticed to evil. And that's James 1:13 and 14. Satan can and does sometimes make a bid for access to Christ's disciples in the manner of Satan's bid to get to Peter, remember? And Jesus warned him about it and told him that he prayed for him. And Jesus would have us pray that we enter not into temptation. Now, that's what he told his disciples repeatedly, remember, on that fateful night of betrayal. So you understand? The Pope, instead of studying to show himself approved unto God, decides, well, let's just change the wording of the prayer. And doing so, he actually ends up exposing his followers to the grave danger that Jesus was trying to protect Peter and his followers from falling into in the Garden of Gethsemane, when he told them repeatedly, watch and pray lest ye enter into temptation. Jesus wants us to pray that prayer. My point here is that, here you go again, some quote-unquote Christian leader correcting the Bible, you know, acting like he is the Bible, like he is the Word of God, and Catholics all over the world will go along with this nonsense and then complain when a liberal Supreme Court jurist decides the Constitution is a living document that can be interpreted to mean different things depending on the views of the interpreter and, you know, and all this kind of, looking at the Bible like it's modern art, you know, see what you want to see in it. Well, that's one thing. Now, and that's bad enough. But this Pope comes along and he wants to take the painter's tool and go in there and actually, quote unquote, correct the painting to make it look the way he wants it to look anyway. I'm glad, by the way, the Pope's willing to move away from the rule of celibacy. That was a bunch of unbiblical nonsense anyway. The Pope's attack on the Lord's Prayer illustrates the broader idea that Christianity as a social cultural movement, I don't mean it theologically here, but as a social cultural movement, has been co-opted by the enemy of our liberties to erode the influence of the Bible in our country. Now, there is great danger among evangelicals also in this same regard, who claim to believe the Bible is the inspired and unchanging Word of God, but they do the same sorts of things with it, compromising the influence of the Bible in our country so it has virtually no authority to govern the lives of believers. Anyway, each person becomes his own authority. It's like the days of before the kings. Every man running around doing what's right in his own eyes. So that is a very condensed assessment of how we got here. Let's look at where we are, or where here is. The left initiated the culture war, my friend. And that has been a largely rhetorical battle between secular and religious humanists against biblical Christians over the effort to define American values and beliefs. And lately, it has already begun the next stage, which is open, armed conflict between opposing sides in this war. The left has already begun physically attacking conservatives and showing open contempt and hostility that goes unchecked by persons in their ranks. You know, like when liberals went off spewing their hatred at Christians in the wake of the Sutherland Springs massacre of 20 Christians while in their church praying. Now, pay attention to this. Many of us sent thoughts and prayers. We use that expression hundreds of times. And we understand that expression simply to mean that we're not aloof. We're not ignoring your hurt. We're not indifferent to your loss. Our thoughts are with you. And we are petitioning God on your behalf that he will minister the comfort only he can provide at such a time. Now, that sounds crazy to unbelievers, but listen to the context in which this comes from our hearts. We're praying to him, that is God, who gave his own son into the hands of wicked men to die for us, and restrained himself from intervening and did so for a divine purpose. In this case, to save us from our sin and from hellfire. And so we commend those suffering these injustices to him who knows best how to identify with and render assistance to those whose loved ones were massacred by this evil in the world that came into their lives through a corrupted and wicked man, just as evil came upon the Son of God through corrupted and evil men. So we pray because we know God works all things together for the good of those who love him and so on. We pray that that good will make itself known to them. What do wicked and ignorant and vile men do in response to our kind gesture of thoughts and prayers are with you? And so they say things like this, quote, they had their prayer shot out of them, end quote. And I could give, there's a whole list of these. And they focus on what they see as the irony of Christians being shot to death while praying. Well, Jesus was praying on the cross when he died for us. Not considering that these things happen in a world that is corrupted and bent and twisted by sin. And that's the truth of it, friend. And God tells the truth. And listen, God tolerates this for the time in order to give you and me and everyone else an opportunity to obey the gospel command to repent and believe on his son to be saved from his anger and wrath against the sin that has allowed this evil. You understand? He, our God, who experienced personally the ultimate horror of evil at the hands of unreasonable and wicked men, you know, but once this purpose of redemption is completed, well, he will come again and he will execute the wrath of God upon all these evil people who bring this evil into the world by their sin. and he'll make a new heaven and a new earth. So that's where we're coming from, friend, when we talk about thoughts and prayers. You see, these humanists say these foolish and unlearned things, but the point is that these people have a hatred for God and a hatred for Christians. They don't have any interest in actually understanding these things. They have no patience with any argument that exposes them to the light of truth for the simple reason that they like darkness more than light. And why? Well, because their deeds are evil. That's what Jesus told us. They are the servants of the evil that is pouring into this country through transgressors. The point here is that the left is beginning to launch open war against Christians. It's the early stages, but already some on the left are resorting to armed assault on our culture. So the culture war is beginning to move into a civil war. The left, they're firing the first shots. There has never been a time in our country's history when it is more important for Christian conservatives to be armed and skilled in the safe use of arms for self-defense. Jesus instructed us that some things would change when he departed, and among them, he said, we would need to arm ourselves for self-defense. My friend, civil war is coming. In some ways, it has already arrived. The Moore campaign is significant in this regard in many ways, but let's look at it. You know, I can see right now, I'm not going to have time in this segment to do that. So I'll put that in the second segment. Right now, let me offer a couple of comments on some other things, and we'll come back to this. What has come of Trump's declaration acknowledging Jerusalem as Israel's capital? What does the Bible say about this? Well, over and again, I read from the mainstream media, of course, that this is a change in U.S. policy. Here's a headline as an example. Quote, Trump recognizes Jerusalem as capital of Israel in reversal of longtime U.S. policy, end quote. Well, my friend, that's only partly true, but it's mostly false, depending on how you look at this. It is true that the U.S. has historically officially refused to acknowledge Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. The key word is official. Well, finally, pressure from the population mounted, and in 1995, under a Republican-led House and Senate, the Congress passed a bill, and President Clinton signed into law official recognition of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. However, they stipulated that it should be made official by the president and accomplished by 1999. You see, they constructed into the law a privilege given to the president to decide when to implement or, in his capacity, to execute the law as the executive. And Clinton ignored the 1999 deadline that was called for, and he used this waiver provision to indefinitely postpone the execution of this law. So, what is it? Is it the law of the land passed by Congress and signed by the president? Is that what defines U.S. policy? Or is it the case that really what we have here is the private policy of a string of presidents to lie to the American people in virtually every campaign, promising they're going to execute the law of the land on this issue, and then, when in office, follow the private policy begun with President Clinton and before him, and delay, delay, delay. Perfect. You see, this gives each lousy, lying candidate the freedom to promise executing the law to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital, to get into office, because that's a popular thing here in America, and then they can use that little waiver clause in there to really break their promises to America, which they do consistently, and they sign this waiver over and over again, and I know Republicans and Democrats have both done this. And probably my position on this will surprise you when I talk about the prophetic implications of it all, but the bottom line is, we can debate whether it is U.S. policy to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital, since the Congress and the president passed a law that says so. But in the liberal world, laws mean nothing. You know, just manipulate, get around the law. Take sanctuary cities as an example. Take Obama and DOMA for an example. Take Obama and a whole list of things, for example. The law is not U.S. policy, rather the whim of this or that liberal political leader, or conservative. That's U.S. policy, so far as they're concerned. So anyway, violence, protests, and arrests have followed U.S. President Donald Trump's decision to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, Al Jazeera warns. In other words, nothing has changed. Here, another quote from this article. Tens of thousands protest. Right. Like that's something we've never seen before. Here's one. Rockets and deadly air raids. Well, now, there's something we never heard of before. Them sending rockets over and Israel responding with air raids. Right. Okay. Deaths and injuries and arrests. And, oh, here's one. Muslim leaders denounce it. You get my point? Nothing new. But what is the prophetic significance of this? Folks, you know, I think this is a great Christmas present from America to Israel, so I'm going to preach a message on the prophetic significance of the Trump execution of the 1995 law recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital. We'll look at the other developments as well. For example, here's some news about a new religion being invented where the adherents worship a robot. Yeah, they worship AI or artificial intelligence. This is for real, by the way. And this really, it does portend, you know, image of the beast stuff, doesn't it? So be there Sunday night, 6 p.m. All right, anyway, hold on through the break, my friends. I'll be right back to complete my report on the culture war moving toward open civil war. But President Trump promised us that we could say Merry Christmas again. Of course, I never stopped, and you probably didn't either, but some Christians have questions about celebrating the holiday, and the Bible does say we're supposed to give an answer. So I'm preaching a series, Is Christmas Christian? In four parts, each Sunday morning at 10:45 a.m. and then Wednesday evenings at 7 p.m. leading up to Christmas Day, when we'll have a very special Christmas service on December the 24th. I'll be answering questions like, should Christians celebrate the birth of Christ? Was Christ born on December the 25th? Are Christmas trees a pagan practice? Did Christians co-opt a pagan holiday? You're going to be surprised, informed, and your holiday celebration much encouraged when you learn the truth about Christmas. Come Sunday mornings at 10:45 and Wednesday evenings at 7. Come get the facts to support a very hearty and merry Christmas to one and all.
Lighthouse Baptist Church, 1310 West Bettervia Road, Santa Maria.
Stand by. Five, the Brain four, Massage Show three, is about two, to blow your
Hello,
mind.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at Lighthouse Baptist Church, your brain masseur and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. My concern has been for many years that the polarization developing between the left and the right, to put it simply, since there are some on the left who would actually agree with me on this and on other things, by the way, and there are some on the right who are about as liberal in their thinking as, well, Doug Jones. So while the designations lack precision, you get the idea. But the polarization between the left and the right has reached a breaking point. And by that I mean a place where reasoned argument is becoming increasingly irrelevant. Where an ideology that is sequestered from facts, isolated from reason, is controlling both sides of the conflict, so that, as I have warned many times over the past 10 to 15 years, it's going to get to the place where people will be dropping their gloves and going at it in a free-for-all, open-and-armed conflict. The culture war has been fought mostly as a rhetorical battle, but more and more it's becoming personal and physical. The Roy Moore campaign illustrates something that I think will, unless we have a general revival of real church in this country, it's going to become civil war. So what happened in the Roy Moore campaign that illustrates how we're advancing toward open civil war? Of course, voter fraud allegations are percolating out there. Who's surprised? The race was decided by a razor-thin margin, something like 15,000 votes, I think, out of 1.2 million cast. Now, this race might have been one, if not the closest, statewide races in history. So voter fraud actually could have decided this election. There are reports that people from different parts of the country were showing up and voting for Doug Jones. I'm not sure how that would work. Alabama does have voter ID laws in place, but, you know, the Dems were particularly concerned about the voter ID law tilting the election in favor of Moore. And there are some faint rumors rumbling about out there that plans were in place to correct for this iniquity, which some suspect is the reason one county held back their reporting until they knew how many votes they're going to need for Doug, and they had absentee ballots prepared to make up the difference. Oh, man. It would be, I think, difficult to get everyone in any single precinct to cooperate. I could tell you that if it did, it's probably going to come out. But I could tell you that the email that circulated claiming that the FEC, which has nothing to do with this anyway, has said that they might have to invalidate 60,000 votes because of suspicion over voter fraud, well, I could tell you that's bogus. It's fake. So it remains to be seen whether voter fraud had any play in this election. It might have. There are some legitimate questions that have been raised. But whether or not voter fraud is the issue here, what is important to my point is that nowadays, every election is suspected of being tampered with and decided by fraud. Everyone. We have not had an election since Al Gore lost to Bush that has not been brought under the cloud of suspicion of voter fraud. I mean, in cases where millions believed it. I'm not talking about the run-of-the-mill, knee-jerk type of thing that goes on in coffee shops. I'm talking about where millions believe that voter fraud has occurred. And my point is that America's confidence in the election system is waning. It's breaking down. And I believe it's purposely being undermined. I do. I believe that there are some unreasonable and wicked people behind this, that there is a concerted effort to undermine the integrity of elections in this country, which is truly, in terms of political voice and the people's participation in government, my friend, the very foundation of our system, and no doubt the number one most important safeguard against open armed conflict over political issues in this country. Our right to vote, to campaign for our beliefs, to participate in the selection of those who govern us, is truly the last standing bulwark against revolution and really against tyranny. Please understand that the left has declared revolution against our system as founded by the founders many decades ago. I mean, they openly declared this. They talk about revolution all the time. The only thing that has kept conservatives from engaging in like manner, the only thing, I mean, that, you know, all the way back to Ayers, you understand, this is, they've been attacking us physically for a long time. And the only thing that has stood as a barrier to conservatives responding to this in open and armed conflict with these people is our belief in the integrity of the election system. If those who hate our government, who believe in communism, who are enamored of Mao Zedong, of Stalin, of Marx, if these people can finally collapse America's confidence in the election system, it's over. I'm warning you. Look, I'm not saying this as a call to armed conflict. I don't believe that that alone would justify open armed conflict. What I'm saying is, listen, I got my finger on the pulse of this thing. We don't have anything else to believe in this country. Our right to vote and our confidence that the vote has integrity is the last standing rudiment of our free republic, and it's been being eroded for years, and people are going to begin turning to other means to protect their liberties and advance their cause. I'm going to explain what I believe are the things that must happen to legitimize a revolution, such as the one that began our country back in 1776, with which I agree fully. And I repeat, I would not advocate the idea that a total collapse of election integrity is by itself legitimate to trigger an open armed war against those we perceive are a direct threat to our liberties. What I am warning you about is that unless we restore election integrity in this country, if it collapses to the point Americans generally scoff elections as meaningless, the transfer of power in this country will begin to be decided by who has the power to force their will on the country. It's already getting there. We'll become like Venezuela and some of these other so-called banana republics. And to exacerbate the problem, you understand the left wants open voting to everyone. I mean, illegals and everybody, citizens or non-citizens, criminals, everyone. They want no limits at all, but they will tolerate the one person, one vote ideal. Although they have proven a willingness to violate that one multiple times. Essentially, the Marxists despise the ballot box and want to neutralize it as an actual means by which power is transferred in this country. Conservatives believe that only citizens should have a right to vote in our elections, and that criminals have forfeited their citizenship privileges and rights. And we believe that the integrity of our elections requires care to ensure that only those with a legal status to do so participate in our elections. That counting votes must be supervised by bipartisan observers who must be given full and unimpeded access to voting records and all that. And pursuing these separate agendas is pushing us farther and farther apart. And if you add to this the basic belief that afflicts people on both sides, but frankly, it's systemic on the left, that what laws they consider unjust are justly circumvented, you know, a la Obama, the Congress that passed Obamacare in the law, circumventing law, the president who enforced the law selectively, all because, you see, they believe that these laws were wrong. Don't you see what that does to the entire system? It breaks down the whole idea of law and order. It encourages anarchy, and it is part of the attack on the left or of the left on our system of governance. Now, that's something I take away from the Moore defeat in Alabama. An election that the people on the losing side refuse to accept because of suspicions of election fraud. And from here on out, it seems the only side that accepts election results is the side that wins. And I'm saying right out loud in front of God and everybody, the liberals are the ones that have promoted this and encouraged this disease in our country. First, by raising the specter of voter fraud, beginning on a national level with Al Gore, and then two, by almost now famously promoting voter fraud by openly encouraging people to vote who are not legally authorized to do it. And this because of their personal value system that convinces them it's wrong to keep them from voting. Yeah, what are you going to do with this? The second thing I see in the Moore debacle that I believe pushes us yet closer to an armed open conflict and civil war is the way the left, with their cohorts in the Republican establishment, went about stopping Moore from becoming a senator for the great state of Alabama. Outright lies. In the primary, McConnell, as you know, funneled millions of dollars into the election to stop Roy Moore, and it was proved that much of the anti-Moore campaign was premised on lies and wicked smear tactics. Well, it didn't work, and it turns out that the reason it did not work is they were not willing to go far enough in their efforts to smear more. If only they had been as willing to lie as the Dems were. Because the Dems, on the other hand, having no such scruples, they raised one allegation after another of sexual misconduct against Moore. And, you know, probably the only reason in the end of the day, and this is my opinion about this, it is what caused just enough conservatives to not show up at the polls and vote for Moore. It only took, by the way, 10 to 15,000 out of 1.2 million votes cast to make the difference. And I think the reason was they were embarrassed by the revelations that Moore, as an older man, dated girls as young as 15 years old 40 years ago. Now, let me hasten to say I wouldn't be comfortable with my daughter, if I had one, at 15 years old, dating a man that was twice her age. But that's where daddies come in, you see. But to call this pedophilia is grotesque, to say the least. And to cast it like he was preying on teenagers is also taking it way out of context. So, you know, you understand, my mother was born in Alabama, and my daddy was born in Arkansas. My dad was 20, I think, or 21 when he married my mom, who was only 14 years of age at the time they got married. I was born to my parents when my mom was 15 years old, just a little this side of 16. And, of course, it required parental permission and all that, but that was not unheard of back then. And it certainly was not against the law, and nobody would have considered it sexual misconduct, even though some might raise an eyebrow about robbing the cradle, a little joke that used to be said from time to time. But by today's standards, generally speaking, we certainly do frown on older men dating girls twice their juniors, or while they're teenagers, unless they're 18. Well, then it's okay, sort of. If it's a liberal candidate or politician that is twice the age of, say, a young intern, you know, like Clinton and Ludinsky, then it's okay. But if it's a conservative candidate that walks around with the Ten Commandments, you know, well, then that's a different story. But in my opinion, that's most of what happened. Enough Alabama conservatives were, I think, embarrassed by this becoming a national scandal. They lost interest in voting for Moore. That, and the fact that after multiple allegations, they just got worn out. I mean, it just simply wore them out. Many conservatives, of course, do care about this sort of thing. And the left simply beat Moore to death with these false allegations. Unproved, but at the same time, in the court of public opinion, it's impossible to defend yourself against this sort of thing in the current politically correct infected environment. And my point here is that when libs learn that outright lies can succeed at turning support away from conservatives, well, here it comes, my friend. And they went after Trump with this, didn't they? But what happened is a recording surfaced of a woman being bribed with $200,000 if she would come out and make this kind of an allegation against Trump. And my friend, this is making people crazy. It's going to provoke violent reaction. Conservatives are going to get angry, not just upset or frustrated, as they have been for many years, but downright angry. And when conservatives start acting out in the way Black Panther thugs do all the time, or Black Lives Matter crowd, how they do it, there's going to be open and armed conflict, and someone needs to step in and stop this train wreck. The culture war is moving toward open civil war. God help us. Join me in spiritual warfare over this issue this coming January. Fast and pray with me for our country sometime during the month of January, and for our Bible-believing churches, that they will pick the truth up out from the gutter where so many have thrown it, restore it to the pillar and ground that Jesus established for it in the earth, the church, and then let's get out there and be the salt and the light we're supposed to be. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch. Now you let me know, you see if they're on. You call me and say lights on if you agree, lights off if you disagree. You can call me directly at 805-714-0785. I understand you need the one now, whether it's a cell phone or not. God bless you, my dear friends. God bless America. And I'll see you in church.
Tune in Saturday at 12 noon.